Dan Barish, the Jewish liberal from Cleveland.
And this is Matt Shepard, the Mormon conservative from Seattle.
And we are the Common Ground. So today we're going to be talking about the very medium that brings our podcast to you, the internet, or as you may have heard it referred to in more polite or casual conversation, the interwebs. The topic is net neutrality. So you want to take it away on that?
Yes. So I think one of the things that's made the internet great is the fact that the government doesn't regulate it nearly as much as they do things like TV or the radio. On anything that's been broadcast over the air, the FCC has had their hands in it for a long time. If you say a certain word, then you get fined, you know, thousands of dollars every time you say it, depending on, all, you know, their broadcast rules, their... all kinds of things that are basically making the TV industry stay in an old-fashioned zone.
Right.
And the internet is, because it's remained free, because it's remained, you know, clear of a lot of that regulation, you know, is why it's been so innovative and been able to change the world. I mean, the last 10 years, the internet has changed the world.
Oh, it's just absolutely amazing. You know, whether you're talking about helping to facilitate popular revolts in Egypt or subversive activity against the mullahs in Iran, or whether you're talking about something more mundane but also very interesting like startups, like Dropbox, like Netflix, we could go on. The internet provides a cradle, both for freedom and for enterprise, that is unprecedented in the history of humanity.
Mm-hmm. It also does provide a hotbed of you know, evil activity as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Whether you're talking about child porn or weapon sales or illegal drugs, it's all there if you know where to find it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, which they just busted, those two, the Silk guys?
Oh, the Silk Road, which these were so-called dark websites, which we could go into a highly technical explanation. But because most of our listeners will be bored about that, you have to get special software and know exactly what web address to go to, and there you are, in order to find a so-called dark website.
But then they both got caught because they used their personal email addresses.
It's kind of funny.
It's like you go to all this trouble to make a dark website and then you use your personal email address? Come on, guys. Figure yourselves out here.
Well,
get a fake account.
Yes, yes. So we will tell you today how to... Never mind. Anyway.
How to be subversive and avoid the government.
No matter what you're doing. Ha ha ha. So yes, today we're going to talk about net neutrality. The idea that the internet should be an open highway, that privilege in terms of a faster road or a slower road should not be given to any one company or any one entity.
I would say, you know, that's the goal of net neutrality, yes.
The idea, you know, you look at Netflix, on any given day, there are a pretty substantial percentage of American streaming activity. Companies like Comcast and Verizon that have built a lot of the infrastructure feel that Netflix should have to pay more. Now, granted, the customer is already paying a bill, and of course, the way American internet billing works is that you pay more money for a faster connection. And I don't think any of us find anything unreasonable about that. But Comcast and Verizon and others, not just them, also feel that Netflix should have to pay up just to ensure a good connection. And actually, as our Comedy Central host John Oliver was pointing out, how interesting it was that during the entire time that Comcast was negotiating, twisting the arm of Netflix about the direct connection deal, Netflix performance plummeted on Comcast's network. And as soon as Netflix agreed to pay them hundreds of millions of dollars, presumably, the performance of Netflix again shot right up on Comcast's network. So there is skullduggery happening here.
Yeah, and this is one reason that, for instance, the Time Warner Cable and Time Warner and Comcast merger should not be happening.
It really shouldn't.
Because if you have internet monopolies, then they have the ability to make these kinds of deals.
Right.
If it were a more competitive market, there wouldn't be the opportunity because you don't have a big enough slice of the market to have any, to hold it over the heads.
You know, I'll tell you what a monopoly looks like. In prisons and jails, there is one basically dominant company called Global Tellink, which charges rates for phone calls so extortionate that in the public sector they would never survive. Would you laugh in my face if I told you that you had to, for a phone call within your own area code, spend a minimum of $2.30 and then per minute at least 6 cents and then up to 30 to 40 cents a minute, and that's just in your local area code. And that's what a government-sanctioned monopoly looks like. And I think we should never allow anything close to that to happen to the internet, because it would crush it.
Exactly. And, that's one of the problems with when the government gets involved, when they start to become a regulating body on an item, it tends to leave it in the past. Now, those rates, they kind of make sense for the 1950s when you had somebody that was, like, taking a wire out and, like, manually moving wires.
Right.
To link your phone call, and it's giant copper cables that are connecting everything, and they built it just for phone calls. You know, that makes sense in that kind of a situation. It doesn't make sense anymore. But those monopolies, those contract things that they get happen, it backs things up. It keeps things in the old days. So a regulation-based net neutrality, I am against. A law-based net neutrality, where it's, okay, guys, don't utilize monopoly control. That makes sense to me. But using it as a regulation where there's a regulatory body that's constantly going around looking for people that are trying to break the law, no. A law that somebody can bring up and charge somebody with against them, that makes sense to me. So that, I think to me that's kind of where, I would go with it, as opposed to like, hey, FCC, start regulating this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you that just categorically, we've seen with the rise of the internet that the law runs far behind the curve of technology. For example, and this is maybe more controversial, but there are situations of, teens who sexed are getting charged under child porn laws. And while I think that teens should exercise better judgment than to send naked pictures of each other to each other, I think that charging them with child porn laws and then you can really ruin their lives and turn them into sex offenders just for one stupid mistake when they didn't even have a malicious intent, let alone to harm a child, I think that's really way too much.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Charging someone who's sending, a picture of themselves, to like their potential boyfriend or whatever.
I think it's poor judgment, but it certainly shouldn't put you in prison or ruin your life and make you a sex offender.
Yeah, totally. This is the ideas behind. I mean, this is one of the reasons that Adam Smith, his book before he did the Invisible Hand was about morality. We have to have a morality within ourselves because the government isn't going to be able to keep up when you have a working free market that can move quickly.
Right.
The government couldn't keep up during the Industrial Revolution. You think they can keep up during the Internet Revolution?
The
billions of people that are all working on new innovations constantly? Like, they can't even keep up with bath salts. Have you heard about these?
Absolutely. I work in corrections.
Yeah, so the bath salts, like, they're trying to regulate it. The regulation is you can't bring in this compound, but you can just slightly change that compound and the law doesn't apply. And so there are hundreds or if not thousands of different conformations that do the exact same thing of these molecules. And so they just change them, change them over like every week or every month and keep going. And they can keep going because you have to get a law through Congress or something to change that. Because the way that things are right now, they just have to change it over and over and over again to maintain it. They can't just make a blanket law that says, hey, no psycho drug-causing bath salts. Let's not do that. Because they're regulation-based, they have to go, hey, look, we're going to go, this compound is bad. This compound is bad.
Oh, well, I
see. That's what also led to a lot of the synthetic fibers that we have now were created to overcome the tariffs during tariff wars between the U.S. and China, because they would regulate a fabric, polyester. So they would come up with, a slight variant on polyester there's some t-shirts that were popular in the 70s that had a ton of patches. Like, it was basically a shirt that was sewn together by a bunch of patches. Those were, again, to overcome tariff regulations, because the way that they did it was you take, for a shirt to say comes from Honduras, which we had a good relationship with Honduras. So it had to have a certain, they just said, no, it has to be made, in Honduras. Well, what China was doing, because we had high tariffs against them, they would send it to Honduras and then have them, finish it and then send it off. So, they're getting around our tariffs that way. So now let's, say you have to have, a shirt has to have at least X number of pieces that were sewn together in the country, for it to be the country of origin. And so what did they do? They made shirts with more pieces. So that most of it was done in China, but there's a couple more pieces that were, enough pieces that were stuck on to avoid the law, so it would say it was made in Honduras. And so they could bring it in. And so this is, the free market will win out as long as the government isn't trying to go crazy with it. And, I mean, honestly, cheaper t-shirts from China, is that really going to kill us? Anyway, I'm going off on a big tangent here, but the point is that the law has a hard time keeping up with innovation.
That's my job to go off on
tangents. We both do it, Dan.
What'd you say?
You do not have a monopoly on tangents.
I do. I'm going to sue you. You're totally sued. Okay.
What's the regulation body or the, who's the judge that's going to hear the case, Dan?
The Anti-Defamation League. Yeah.
So you're saying that I'm defaming Jews?
Yes. Meh.
All right. Okay. I'll wait to hear their call.
Oh, okay.
So the point of this is that the government has a difficult time keeping up with innovation and with the free market. So we need to keep the internet free and, free from monopolies and free from extortion. But also free from extraneous government regulation. I don't want the internet to become like other FCC regulated bodies where, if someone says the F word, they have to pay $10,000.
Do you think it should be legal to say the F word on radio? I'm just curious then.
I don't know. I haven't given that a ton of thought. So
I haven't either.
I know the internet. The internet is a place where you can choose what you're listening to. When it's a place where someone else is choosing what you can listen to, or choosing what you can watch, it's a different story. But, I am choosing what I watch on the internet. If some site is a site that happens to say the F word all the time and I don't want to hear it, then I go to another site. I just don't go there anymore. So that's why I'm much more for, let's just make everything the internet, as opposed to making the internet cable TV, which is, what a lot of people are trying to do, where they put the internet out there, like the Comcast and DirecTV and their deals on like NFL games or NCAA games, the college football games, for example. They have them all online, or most of them are online, but you have to subscribe to their network in order to see them.
Right.
You have to be a Comcast subscriber to see the ESPN games. It's they're trying to make it the internet into cable TV, as opposed to it being the internet where people access stuff. And so that's one, I think that those kinds of companies will, one, go down the tubes, because the internet will be free and remain free, you know, even if it has to go to a strict peer-to-peer between people's phones. In 10, 20 years, it'll be fast enough to go that way where people can still stream stuff, just going phone to phone across the, you know, across the world wirelessly.
So you mean you think that Comcast will die or ESPN will die? Which one did you mean?
The monopolies will die. The people that are trying to squeeze it down, that don't understand the internet culture and the ideas that are, that it's about freedom. It's about freedom to say things that are offensive. It's about freedom to say things that are great and awesome and to bring people up and to do amazing things. It's about more speech, not less. And that's what the internet is all about. And we weed out the things that are dumb. I mean, there are tons of tweets that get, you know, only two people see. But then there are other tweets that get followed by, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. Why? Because they make interesting tweets. Or they're an interesting person that we want to know about them.
The signal-to-noise ratio, as it's called. Anyway, I hope this is entertaining to our listeners. What we're saying is that there's a very big difference between regulation and law. Regulation is slow-moving and inadequate to keep up with the pace of change. A law, which just says the internet shall be free, might be easier to implement and doesn't have necessarily as much of a disadvantage of moving slowly due to high, high specificity. And if we have a situation where a startup has to pay hundreds of millions of dollars to stream video at a reasonable pace, just like Netflix can do, that startup is never going to get off the ground. And then the extreme danger is that you lose the next Google. You lose the next Apple. You lose the next Microsoft. You lose the next Netflix. We could go on.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the danger of regulation, is that the downside of regulation is invisible, because people don't see the things that never pop up. They don't see that, you know, if people were to suddenly say, okay, we're going to regulate Google out of business right now, then people would get upset and be like, okay, then Google has some power. If people, you know, was it 15 years ago, wanted to regulate Google out of business, who would have cared? You know, mm-hmm. And so that's the burden, the regulatory burden is trillions of dollars on our economy. You know, the stuff that's going on with, like, Gibson guitars. Have you heard about that?
Something about they're not allowed to use a certain wood.
So they were never accused of anything, never requested to see, never to show any paperwork, and basically a SWAT team came in and seized large amounts of their inventory and didn't tell them until after they seized everything. Oh yeah, this is a, you know, because you're violating these things, and they had the paperwork to prove that they weren't. But because the regulatory environment was there, and people, again, this is part of the dangers of government bureaucracy, is that in many cases they have to keep doing things, or they have a budget and they have to use it. So they have to use it on something. And if you're a regulatory agency, you have to regulate something. And if there's nothing to regulate, you have to make stuff up or push the boundaries of it into the inane or things that are completely stupid. And so this is part of the, you know, the Gibson guitars or the oyster farm in California that was shut down just because they didn't want cows grazing, but because the oyster farm filters out the bad stuff from the cows, it was keeping the crazy situation. So in California, there was a oyster farm that, because there's this oyster farm, the oysters are filter feeders. And so the cows that were grazing in the areas above this bay, you know, normally when cows graze above a bay or something, when there's a large amount of livestock there, it comes in and it destroys a lot of the ecosystem. But because there's this oyster farm there, it's preventing those cows from causing damage to the ecosystem. Great kind of, you know, situation. But the regulators didn't like those cows up there. And so they regulated this oyster farm out of business. It shut its doors, I think, last year. And so now they can work on getting rid of the cows, because then they'll have evidence while they're destroying the ecosystem. And it's, you know, dangers of government regulation. This is why, you know, using the FCC is not in my boat for enforcing these regulations. But keeping the internet free is great, and it should be. Anyway, Dan, what do you got on this?
I mean, this is one of those situations where perhaps to the frustration of our listeners, we agree. But then any situation, you know, as John Oliver also pointed out, it's a remarkable situation where you have the activists, just the little people, standing in the same place with big giants like Amazon, Facebook, Google, Microsoft. They're all pro net neutrality. Apple has been more silent about it, to my surprise. But, it's not surprising, actually, because if they want their Apple TV thing to get off the ground, they need to be in bed with Comcast.
Yeah. I think there's... If it were to go to a regulatory agency, I think that would open up more opportunities for lobbyists to try to bring down innovation within the internet and try to create more monopolies. So, in instances like taxi drivers in New York, there is a government-controlled monopoly in New York. Mm-hmm. Uber is subversing this, which is, again, the beautiful power of the internet. But in order to have a taxi driver's thing, you have to be certified as a taxi driver, which means that you have to be part of their taxi driver's union, pay their dues, go through their system. And so there is a government-controlled monopoly on taxi drivers in New York City, as an example. Why? Because they benefit from that.
It's a funny thing about Uber. The one time I tried to have them pick me up, it was a complete, dismal, utter failure. But anyway.
You know, and it may be that it doesn't really work very well in Cleveland.
It wasn't in Cleveland. This was actually in Dallas, Texas. I was leaving my friend's wedding party, and I summoned Uber. I thought, let's give this a dry run. This is not high stakes. I don't need to catch a plane. And when you... Have you ever summoned an Uber car?
I haven't, no.
Right, so when you do, you get to watch the driver come to you on an Apple map. It's not Google, because Apple Maps is the underpinning in iOS, so presumably in Android you're watching it on a Google map. But anyhow, you watch where they are, and then you watch them coming to you. And he just couldn't seem to find me, and it wasn't that hard. I could have even done it. And eventually he calls me and says, I'm out of the car, I'm walking to you. And I said, sir, you're a good 10 minutes of driving away from me. Getting out and walking is not going to help you. Maybe we'd better just call this off. And he says, yeah, we're going to have to cancel this. And I thought, this company is worth $18 billion to its shareholders? What the? And so I deleted the app. And so that was, you know.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people swear by Uber, but I just thought, wow. How did you guys get anywhere? Like, I could have done this.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, I've heard, the only stories I've heard have been in, like, I think San Francisco and New York, the stories that I've heard about using Uber. And the people that really, there are a lot of people in New York that really like Uber. So maybe it works well in New York, where there's, you know, less city sprawl and there's a lot more people. And that's, you know, maybe it needs a density thing or...
I mean, Uber started out, as far as I understand, because startup guys wanted to be able to not have a problem when they left work very late at night or early in the morning.
Huh. Yeah, I know it's a internet taxi cab thing, and I've heard some people that really like it.
Right. But,
So this is the kind of innovation that can subvert these sort of things.
Exactly. So we're both very much in favor of disruptive innovation. Some liberals don't like certain parts of this, don't like it throwing older parts of the workforce out of business. And my response to it is this, is everyone's entitled to respect, and everyone's entitled to a chance to try to get a job. What you're not entitled to, what no one is entitled to, is to have your way of life preserved.
Yes.
You're entitled to try to. You're entitled to try to preserve your way of life, but you aren't entitled to the government regulating a new disruptive competitor out of business just so that you don't have to change.
Yes, there's a lot of there's a recent report that just came out where they estimate by 2025, 50% of current jobs will be almost of current job types will be almost non-existent because of automation, self-driving cars, a number of things like that. So the taxi cab driver, the burger flipper, the person who takes your order at McDonald's, to the cashiers, to a lot of these sort of things will basically be non-existent come 2025.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of manufacturing due to 3D printing and stuff like that will go out the window. A lot of these sort of things will, this disruptive innovation, which will be great for humanity, but it won't be great for that person who's made their whole life around being a cab driver or
a factory worker.
That sort of thing. And those, or a factory worker, those people will be very much against it. And, those are instances where a union will be more detrimental than it would be, a union fighting to keep themselves alive. I mean, Detroit still has a person on staff who shoes horses.
Wow.
They don't have any horses in Detroit, but because of their state status, they have, their protected status. They still have a person who shoes horses in the Detroit Police Department.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, and this is the kind of stuff that people can try to cling to the past, or we can take the best of the past and learn those things and learn those lessons and try to put them onto the future,
mm-hmm.
which I think is what we need to do and keep on with the internet.
Agreed. So, and by the way, I'm not saying that we should get unions out of the way, but we also, I'm just fundamentally against the government regulating a new disruptive force away to keep someone's lifestyle around.
Yep.
All right. This is Dan Barish, the Jewish liberal from Cleveland, signing off.
And this is Matt Shepard, the Mormon conservative from Seattle, signing off.